The official sponsor of FederalNewsRadio.com. The Cisco Center at FederalNewsRadio.com is your resource for cloud computing, data center security, and collaboration strategy and solutions.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and we've got a trifecta for you today, if a trifecta can count on four people. We have four excellent guests coming up at the top of the hour. We're going to be talking with the Federal Times team, Steve Watkins, who's editor of that newspaper, and Steve Losey, who's a senior writer for it. We're going to be going over the shutdown possibilities and answer some questions. We've had some from listeners about that. And then later on, we're going to switch over and talk to Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association. And Carol is going to talk to us about the pay givebacks at the Department of Energy and maybe at some other agencies and why that's happening and how it's happening. And also she's going to comment on the status of the pay-for-performance system within the senior executive service ranks. And last but not least, financial planner Arthur Stein will talk to us about ways that people can cope during the shutdown. And if we don't have a shutdown, what you as a federal worker or a retiree should be doing to make sure your future is brighter and greener in the best sense. So do we have the two Steves on the line?
We're here.
Hey.
And good to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you. Steve Watkins and Steve Losey from the Federal Times. And gang, you guys have been tracking many, many things, and feel free to break news as you have been doing lately. What's the status with the shutdown?
Well, April 8th, of course, is S-Day, as you correctly called it. When the current CR expires, and everyone's looking to Congress to see if they can emerge with a deal. At this point, we've got an interesting development announced yesterday by Eric Cantor, the number two Republican in the House, saying basically there will be no additional short-term CRs unless there is a long-term spending bill deal imminent. And at this point, there is no long-term spending bill imminent, and it remains to be seen if the two sides will get together. I think what's happening this week is it's very interesting. The Republicans basically have to make a decision, it seems, and that is, do they basically throw their cards in with the conservatives and the Tea Party wing of the party, and basically walk away from the talks on the argument that it doesn't cut enough. They are pushing for a $60 billion cut below current levels, or do they strike a deal with the Democrats? And it looks like that number is quickly narrowing. Senator Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader, has said that they are prepared, the Democrats are prepared to pass a spending bill that would be essentially $30 billion below the 2010 level. That would count the $10 billion already cut from previous CRs and an additional $20 billion in cuts. So essentially they are approximately $30 billion apart. There's a couple key questions here. One is going to be about some of the political riders that the Republicans are insisting on. They want to, as we saw in their House-passed spending bill, they want to defund a number of things that really have nothing to do with the deficit spending or spending cuts, defund some EPA enforcement of Clean Air Act activities, defund things like the health care reform, federal money that goes to Planned Parenthood and other things. Those are going to be key battleground points, I believe. And then there are certain to be some additional defections, I think, from the conservative wing of the Republicans. The question is whether the Democrats will be able to step up and fill that void from the Republicans who are under great pressure to say no, basically.
Right, and things like National Public Radio are on that list, too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really unrelated to the deficit. I just want to ask you both something, because you've been watching this. It seems to me most people are operating as if nobody really wants a shutdown. They want that to have their way, but nobody really wants a shutdown. But I wonder if that's not a little bit off, that maybe there are people up there, factions, groups, what have you, that would delight in a shutdown, maybe because they don't like government, maybe because they don't like government workers. And Howard Dean, and I did not confirm this, but I saw a quote on the wires this morning where Howard Dean, the former chairman of the Democratic National Committee, said if he were still head of the DNC, and this was the quote, that he would welcome a shutdown because he knows which side would lose. Presumably, he's thinking that if there's a public relations battle, Republicans would lose it. Do you think there are people up there that really want a shutdown?
There may be. I would say that's a dangerous gambit for anybody. But what I've seen is that the Tea Party wing, some of the leaders seem to be saying quite clearly that they feel so strongly about accomplishing this $100 billion cut in the first year that they are prepared to go to a shutdown to accomplish that. I've not heard any Democrat say that they are prepared to see a shutdown. And to be honest, I'd be surprised if even privately Democrats would like to see that happen for a number of reasons. One is both parties would basically come out the loser on this. We've seen a number of surveys that have showed this quite clearly, that both Republicans and Democrats would take a big hit on this. The other thing is that a shutdown is certain to have some economic effect, and I don't think any Democrat or Republican, well, I'll say any Democrat, because you brought up the Democrats, I don't think it's in their interest, and I don't think they see it as in their interest to have a shutdown that is going to possibly worsen the economy.
I think talking with some federal workers, one of their fears is that some of the newcomers to Congress, who really are maybe very smart people, but they're not familiar with the way the government goes, don't understand the unintended consequences of a shutdown, which can be, as we know, all over the place. A couple of questions here, right, because we've been getting a ton of them when I announced you guys were going to be on the show. This one is from Guy, and he says, if there's a shutdown and employees are not paid for those days, does it impact on an individual's high three salary for retirement calculation purposes? Good question. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, it is a good question, and unfortunately, it is a little bit of an unresolved question. There's some indication that if you don't get paid for those days, then your yearly salary would decrease, and as a result, that would impact your high three. On the other hand, I was just looking at the Partnership for Public Services website, and they have an FAQ about the shutdown effects, and they're saying that there would be no effect on the high three average unless the furlough causes someone to be in a non-pay status for more than 6 months during a calendar year. So we're hearing a bit of things on both sides, and it's a good question, and it's one that we're going to try to sort out one way or another.
Well, it's good, and I know the OPM has on its website, they have a 56-count page fact sheet on the furlough facts, and that may be in there.
56 pages, yeah. Well, it's funny. The AFG also has a document out that provides some guidance as well on the possible impact of a shutdown and what that'll mean for benefits and pay as well.
And that would have the same question would arise if there is a 10-day furlough. If people lose 10 days' pay, would that have an impact on their high five? So we'll check it out. I got one from Mary here, and she says, I probably missed this, but during a shutdown, does our health insurance continue in force, or are we out of luck and must pay all expenses out of our own pockets? Now, she's safe there, correct?
Yes, that's right. That 56-page OPM document you mentioned did have that answer, and it said that even if the government doesn't pay premiums to health insurers on time because of the shutdown, the health coverage is still going to continue. So don't worry about your health insurance.
Very good. Got one from Ray, who works for the SEC, and he says, a question about potential shutdown. Typically, we're paid every 2 weeks. Those of us who receive direct deposit will be paid on a Friday. In April, we're scheduled to be paid on April 1st, 15th, and 30th. The 15th direct deposit will be for work performed through the close of business on April 8th, which is the end of the CR, or when the CR starts, as I understand it. If it matters, I believe our pay is processed by Interior. People are wondering if, assuming there's a shutdown, we will be paid on the 15th of April, given that this pay relates to work performed through April 8th.
Yes, the answer is yes, you will. The OPM's guidance says that agencies that handle these paychecks are supposed to keep just enough people on hand and on duty to process the last paycheck for the last couple of days that furloughed employees keep working. And once those checks go out, those workers then get furloughed themselves. So, yes, your paychecks are safe up until the point of a shutdown.
Great. Let's take a short break here, talking with Steve Watkins and Steve Losey from the Federal Times, and we'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Looking to get more from your technology investment? Look to HP Desktop Computing, powered by Vision Pro technology from AMD. Together, HP and AMD deliver more desktop computers with exceptional visual performance, enhanced energy efficiency, and advanced security features, available in a range of sleek, space-saving designs. Give everyone in your agency the power to perform at a price that makes it possible. Give them the power of HP and AMD. To find out how, go to hp.com/go/perform.
What role does the Federal Labor Relations Authority play in fostering stable labor management relations? How is Labor Relations Authority revitalizing, reinventing, and re-engaging itself? And what does the future hold for the Federal Labor Relations Authority? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these and other questions with his very special guest, Carol Waller-Pope, the chairman of the Federal Labor Relations Authority. Next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Cybersecurity, recognized as an imperative in today's complex, information-dependent world. So who better than UMBC, a leader in science and technology education and research, to offer graduate programs in cybersecurity? Come, learn more about UMBC cybersecurity programs at a lunchtime info session, Wednesday, April 6th, 12 noon, on the UMBC campus in Catonsville, Maryland. Register today at umbc.edu/cyber.
I wasn't born to go with the flow. I was born to make a difference, to make waves. I want my sweat and hard work to mean something. I was born to serve in the United States Coast Guard. If you were born ready to lead, to protect, to uphold the law, then visit GoCoastGuard.com. The United States Coast Guard. Born ready.
Sponsored by the United States Coast Guard, in cooperation with the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Muammar Gaddafi's army hasn't thrown in the towel yet. They set back the momentum of the rebels headed towards Tripoli. In the meantime, Admiral James Stavridis, the U.S. head of NATO, said there are flickers of al-Qaeda's presence in Libya, waiting to fill the void left behind by Gaddafi if he's ousted. But Stavridis added there is no evidence of a significant presence. The NATO-led aerial bombardment of Libyan forces is expected to continue until Gaddafi gives up or is defeated. I'm J.J. Green.
Multiple times a day, we all listen to the weather forecast. Every day, Airing collects and organizes up to 100,000 real-time automated position and weather reports from aircraft and forwards them to the National Weather Service World Area Forecasting Center, where it's used as input for their predictive weather models. Better forecasts contribute to greater public safety. For information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions, like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
Last April, 256 senior federal managers went missing. Are you next? The most successful managers know to never pass up an opportunity to learn. Join them this year to discover how to maximize your agency's forward momentum at the Federal Senior Management Conference at the Hyatt Regency Chesapeake Bay in Cambridge, Maryland, this April 10th through 13th. The Federal Senior Management Conference is the preeminent conference for senior federal managers, presented for government by government advisors, with registration open only to government employees. Register now at fedsmc.com or call 202-237-0300.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn, talking with Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times, and Steve Losey, senior writer. And the subject du jour is, of course, the possibility of a shutdown. And we've got some very good questions from listeners and readers. And the one says, this is William here, says, if I am on leave while the federal government is shut down, will I get paid? There again, this is why OPM has a 56-page thing. These questions come from everywhere. What do you think?
You're not going to get paid if you're on leave. If you if you're on leave when the government shuts down, you go into non-pay status just like everybody else.
Okay. All right. Very good. So taking vacation won't let you escape this, huh?
It'd be nice, but unfortunately, no.
I mean, you can go to Ocean City, but you're there on your own nickel, I guess.
Of course. Okay. Yeah.
What happens if
bad thing to do?
Well, we're going to come to that in a minute. Here's one from Marlene, and she says, what happens if you've submitted your retirement papers for 29 April and the furlough begins 9 April? Should you pull your papers and resubmit for a later retirement date?
I would say no. If you put in your retirement papers, they may not be processed when the government shuts down, but when the government comes back, that work will start up again. So I would not push back retirement date a week or two because of the shutdown.
Right. Okay. And here's a very general one, but this guy, Jim, says, I work for the Veterans Administration at a VA hospital. We're told we won't be affected by the shutdown because our budget has approved. How many agencies will be affected by the shutdown? I guess the short answer is most of them, huh?
Yeah, to some extent. Most of them. It's kind of hard to say who's going to be affected and who won't be. The general rule of thumb is, as long if you're involved in protecting life and property and providing health care, you're exempt. There's other essential actions. We'll probably see many VA people stay on, right now, we don't know exactly who is going to be exempt and who is not.
Well, I think as you guys in the Federal Times commented one time we were discussing this very accurately, is this is going to be different from the 95-96 shutdown thanks to 9/11. And so many more feds, a higher percentage of feds are now involved in what is considered essential work and, fighting terrorism, tracking crime, managing the borders, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Most of the growth that we've seen in the last decade has been on the Homeland Security, national security side of the government. And, I think basically a short answer to your question is I think all agencies are going to be affected. The question is to what degree. And obviously the Homeland and national security related agencies are going to be affected far less.
And it's interesting. Our Internet editor, Suzanne Kubota, caught this today. USA Today is reporting that the OMB is telling agencies not to talk about what functions they are going to have to shut down in the event of a shutdown.
Yeah, no surprise to any of us. We've been trying to get a hold of the details.
Right. So much for transparency, huh?
Exactly.
Here's one from Jonathan. He says, I remember the 21-day shutdown in the winter of 1995-96. For weeks, we did little work but sat around just nattering concerning the impending layoff. Then we came back again. We just nattered for weeks. All in all, the work fell off something awful. Imagine what's been happening this year. Any work that is getting done is in spite of the Congress. Are you hearing talk about, I know people are angry, and I'm sure you're hearing that, about productivity being off?
Yeah, you hear it from agencies like Social Security, for example, where they've made some pretty good progress catching up on backlogs that they have to address disability claims and so forth. And under the CR, they are seeing, because they've got a hiring freeze in effect, a lot of their field offices are really feeling the pinch. So they are starting to lose traction on whatever gains they were making, trying to catch up those backlogs. And I think you can see that at other agencies as well.
That's really tragic. And, you know, I think the commissioner of Social Security gave his people the day off after Thanksgiving as a sort of a reward for their great productivity that year.
And they are particularly hurt at Social Security, and we've been hearing a lot from them. We've heard that you know, they're starting to cut back on the how they can do or conduct hearings in the way they can conduct hearings on disability claims. So they may not be able to do as much traveling around as they used to hear some of those and get closer to people with those claims.
Very good. Well, if the IRS even hints that they're not going to process refunds as quickly as necessary. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on. We're going to do this again next week. Thanks for your insight, Steve Watkins, Steve Losey. We'll see you next week. And we'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM, talking with Carol Bonacero, president of the Senior Executives Association.
The ComSatCom report, provided by Hughes.
My unit needs to be able to transmit critical information quickly and reliably while deployed. We must have the flexibility to deploy mobile forces fast as we adapt to changing conditions in our environment. Only satellite can support real-time communications everywhere in the field, whether in the air, on the ground, or at sea.
Hughes provides advanced communications on-the-move solutions with global coverage. Our solutions meet U.S. government security requirements, including FIPS and TRANSEC, and operate on multiple bands and waveforms. Hughes products comply with open, commercial standards, enabling easy integration with existing systems. Our team of highly skilled and cleared engineers stands ready to work with you to meet your mission requirements.
To learn more about Hughes technologies and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes on the web at defense.hughes.com.
This week's Kaiser Permanente Experts in Health topic is foot health, featuring Dr. Stephen G. Chatlin, Chief of Podiatry in D.C. and suburban Maryland for the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group.
Diseases and disorders of the foot and ankle impact the lives of millions of Americans. At Kaiser Permanente, we believe the following tips can help keep your feet healthy and keep you active. Inspect your feet regularly. Check for changes in color or temperature of your feet, as well as cracks or cuts in the skin. If you notice anything unusual, call your doctor. Wear appropriate shoes for the intended activity. Stretch before you run. Stretching can lessen the strain on your muscles. Diabetic patients need to pay special attention to their feet. Ask your doctor about specific issues to watch for. Lastly, don't ignore pain. Foot pain is not normal. If it persists, call your doctor. Be kind to your feet and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to fundamentally change how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"The migration to cloud will be deliberate, and it will be measured, and it will be from a risk management perspective, which means there's not going to be a wholesale migration to the cloud quickly. So the way to start is back in the consolidation in the data center. The fundamentals of data center consolidation are enablers for cloud computing, and they provide significant benefits, not just in terms of space and headroom, but also cost savings that will enable cloud migration and mobility as later phases."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm glad you're with us. And tell a friend, because we got more coming up here. We have Carol Bonacero on the line. Carol is president of the Senior Executives Association, and they represent most of the 7,000-plus career members of the Senior Executive Service. Carol, are you with us?
Absolutely.
You had a busy day on Capitol Hill yesterday.
Yes, indeed.
What was that all about?
Well, Senator,
Chicago decided to hold a hearing with Ranking Member Johnson on the Senior Executive Service. It's been quite a while since Congress has taken a look at the service and how it's working. As you know, it was established in 1978. And we've had a new pay system since 2004. So Senator Kaga is probably likely to introduce some legislation, presumably with a number of the association's recommendations, to improve the service, because we know that we have some problems.
The question du jour, I guess, for the senior executives is, what about this pay give back that was directed to the Department of Energy?
Well, it's fortunately, I guess, not a give back. It's a takeaway.
Okay.
what happened was that, as you know, the president, of course, announced a pay freeze in 2011 and 12. And a lot of senior executives thought that, well, we're in a pay-for-performance system. In 2010, my performance was appraised as of the end of the fiscal year, as of the end of September. And presumably, since any pay adjustments are based on that performance, I should receive any adjustment that I deserve. And I think that was certainly the view of folks at the Department of Energy. So they moved ahead to determine the appropriate pay adjustments and make them, and apparently made them effective in December, thinking, of course, that they would not be violating the pay freeze, which took effect in January. Well, they didn't violate the pay freeze, but what they did violate, apparently, was the only one pay adjustment per year rule. And so as of the pay period that just ended, the executives at Energy who received those increases are going back to their prior salaries, but they won't have to pay back the additional salary they received for a couple of months.
Do you have any idea what that give back will be or take away?
Well, typically what we've seen is that pay adjustments for the SES have averaged around 2.5%. And even those with an outstanding rating, we've seen pay adjustments that average around 3%. So as you know, Mike, the executives do not receive locality pay, and they don't receive COLAs, so all of their pay adjustments are based on performance.
And the number at the Department of Energy that were impacted, is it a couple of hundred?
It's about 220.
220. And what about other agencies? We heard that there were three or four more that were in the same boat.
Yeah, there were two other agencies. I don't know that I'm free to mention them. I presumably they've been informed by now, but I don't want to be the one to let the cat out of the bag.
Okay. Can you just give us their initials?
Who shall remain nameless, uh-huh. But whose initials are.
Yes.
But there were only 10 at each of those, so they were very small agencies.
Okay, all right. Well, they will be unhappy campers.
Yes.
Now, with the pay situation now, I mean, does this jeopardize raises given in past years if there's a two per year rule?
I don't think that that's been violated in past years, mm-hmm. As far as I'm aware. I mean, there is a way to get two per year, but in order to do that, one of the most common way would be that you've had an increase in responsibility, essentially a promotion. And what has happened over the years, I mean, this may get a little too arcane, but agencies typically make the decision, of course, by the end of a calendar year, certainly in November, no later than December, but then they have not made the actual pay adjustment until January, because then they can do two things. They can make the adjustment based on performance, and they can also do something called maintaining relative position. And what that means is that if there has been an increase in the executive schedule, which sets the cap for SES pay, that that agencies can make a further adjustment based on that. So they've usually rolled those two together, although it still doesn't amount to very much. Alternatively, what they could have been doing, but as best I can tell, they haven't, is making the performance adjustment in December and then making the relative position adjustment in January. I suspect that they just didn't want to go through that much paperwork, frankly. But if they had, in fact, done that, Energy probably would have gotten away with giving the performance-based raises.
Right. It's really sad because Energy was trying to do the right thing, and
absolutely,
it makes them look bad in the eyes of the employees when, in fact, they did a good thing, and they got extra pay for a couple months.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question they were trying to do the right thing. They weren't trying to be, you know, clever or underhanded. I think a lot of people felt that, look, we're talking about what you did in 2010. Everybody understands you're not going to get an increase for 2011. So, you know, it's interesting. After you mentioned the hearing yesterday, and I got an email from a member this morning that said after they had read all the testimony and what OPM had to say and so on, that this is so penny-wise and pound-foolish, it's stunning. Attract the best, but don't pay them, train them, or indeed support them. Get the idealists on board and underpay them, berate them politically, publicly, I should say, and expect them to stay.
Yeah, a recipe for success. Thank you, Carol Bonacero. Thanks for the update on the SES. And we'll be right back here on WFED in 1500 talking with Arthur Stein, a financial planner, about weathering the next couple of weeks.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Nearly 15 years after the Clinger-Cohen Act, the debate over the role of federal chief information officers continues. Current and former CIOs say few agencies have lived up to the spirit or intent of the law. Now, Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine is considering ways to update the law to ensure that CIOs have oversight over technology at all levels of the agency, including budget, architecture, and implementation. I'm Amy Morris.
Attention all civilian federal employees. Did you know that there is a nonprofit association founded in 1943 that provides life insurance at rates far less than the federal program and also offers annual premium refunds and a college scholarship program? The company's name is WEPA. WEPA enables federal employees to purchase better life insurance at far better prices. To learn more about WEPA's low premium rates and refund history, visit WAEPA.org. Again, that's WAEPA.org.
Tune in to The Federal Drive every weekday morning from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Hear news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Tom and Amy will give you the information you need to help explain and navigate your world. Listen on the radio at Federal News Radio 1500 AM, morning 6 to 10, or go to federalnewsradio.com and click Listen Live. The Federal Drive is sponsored by Symantec Confidence in a connected world.
For more than 30 years, FLIR Systems has provided customers with trusted support needed in critical missions. With a full spectrum of products designed to enhance perception and awareness, FLIR's threat detection systems are used by civilian and government agencies around the world. FLIR now provides comprehensive radiation detection and identification for threat detection, disaster preparedness, and emergency management, such as the ongoing crisis in Japan. For more information, visit FLIR.com/detection.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Muammar Gaddafi's army hasn't thrown in the towel yet. They set back the momentum of the rebels headed towards Tripoli. In the meantime, Admiral James Stavridis, the U.S. head of NATO, said there are flickers of al-Qaeda's presence in Libya waiting to fill the void left behind by Gaddafi if he's ousted. But Stavridis added there is no evidence of a significant presence. The NATO-led aerial bombardment of Libyan forces is expected to continue until Gaddafi gives up or is defeated. I'm J.J. Green.
Multiple times a day, we all listen to the weather forecast.
Every day, Erin collects and organizes up to 100,000 real-time automated position and weather reports from aircraft and forwards them to the National Weather Service World Area Forecasting Center, where it's used as input for their predictive weather models. Better forecasts contribute to greater public safety. For information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated. Career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. We talked earlier with Steve Losey and Steve Watkins from the Federal Times, and then Carol Bonacero gave us an update on the latest with senior executives and find out that about 230 or 40 of them, it looks like, in three federal agencies are going to have to give back performance pay raises that they received last year. And that's bad news, but the agencies certainly did it in good faith, and they ran afoul of the rules and the pay freeze itself. Talking now with Arthur Stein, he's a certified financial planner, and Arthur, you've got all kinds of numbers and letters behind your name, but you know what you're talking about, and you worked on the Hill for a while too, didn't you?
I was a staff economist on the House Ways and Means Committee. I was there from 75 to 81.
Okay, so you really know the. You worked on the Hill.
Yes, I was there from 75 to 81 on the House Ways and Means Committee.
Excellent, great, a good time to be there too. A lot more good feeling up there then than now.
Yeah, you know, when I was there, it was the old days, and Democrats, Republicans, they would vote against each other and then go out and have dinner together and have a good time, and people got to be friends, not because they were the same party, but just based upon who they were, and so there's a lot of collegiality. There's certainly no tension among the staff on the Ways and Means Committee between the Republicans and the Democrats, and it made a lot easier to get things done. Now we're in this, you know, a very difficult system where people are treating everything as if it were a zero-sum game, and so that any victory by one side is a defeat for the other, and you know, I'd kind of like to go back to the old days, and maybe they never existed, but where people did things for whatever was best.
I remember that very well, and you're right. That was the way it was, and they dealt with each other, and it, like many people I know in my little business here, covering the federal beat. You know, we have the Federal Times, Government Executive, various newsletters. We're all, and Washington Post, obviously. We're all rivals during the day from 9 to 5, but when we get off from work, we like each other, and we know each other, and we figure nobody understands us like we do, and you don't have that on the Hill anymore.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing that I see is that a lot of, you know, elected officials and a lot of, you know, appointed people just seem to hate the federal government and whatever it does. I don't understand that because we depend upon it.
Yeah, it certainly has changed, and it's not going to go back. Now, surviving the shutdown, and you promised you wouldn't start out by saying everybody should have 6 months savings because if you don't have it, it's too late.
Can I just say it once, Mike?
All right, do it. Okay. But I mean, you know, not that this is the end of the world, but for some people, a repeat of the 1995 winter of 95-96 shutdown that was, for some people, was 21 days. That can get hairy.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, this is even more complicated than that because, one, we don't know how long it's going to last. And then I've heard some talk about how they're going to start furloughing maybe like one day a week, federal employees, and I assume docking their pay. Of course, we've got a pay freeze in, and they could always mess around with the cost of living adjustment. So, you know, certainly people have to be very careful about, you know, how much they're spending and how much income they have. And I don't want to say, again, emergency fund. If you don't have that, if you're going to need other money, for a lot of people, if they're able to do it, one of the first places they should turn is to get a home equity line of credit if they don't already have it. This is great. It doesn't cost you anything to get the line of credit. Of course, if you use it, you're borrowing using your home as collateral. It's sort of like a second mortgage, but you don't pay any interest unless you use it. And it's if you have equity in your home that you can borrow against and you meet the bank's standards, you can get one very quickly within one or two business days. The interest is deductible on your income tax, and you can pay it back anytime you want. So that's great for the people who can do that. Of course, if you have whole life insurance with a cash value, you have an automatic right to withdraw and borrow money out of the cash value of your life insurance. You can always pay it back. That's very attractive. Once we get beyond those two, you know, there are no more attractive choices. We're looking at using credit card debt, you know, I mean, spending money and not paying off your credit cards, which is awful. And I, you know, hate to even say it. And of course, another choice is to sell investments that you hold outside the TSP and outside of an IRA. And, you know, so maybe you own some stocks and maybe this is a good time to sell them and use that as your emergency fund.
Well, you know, one of the problems, as you say, is we don't know if there's going to be a shutdown. If there is one, we don't know how long it will last. The last big one, the 95-96 one, came in two waves, but it was a total of 21 days for some people. At that time, everybody got paid eventually. There was a makeup salary, but there were people who went without at the time, you know, missed a week of salary or 2 week check in some cases. So it can be a problem. And we're saying these are sort of last resorts. I hear from people who say that the first thing they're going to do is cancel their contributions to the thrift savings plan.
Okay. Absolutely. Except I think it's kind of too late, but what I said, you know, a couple of weeks ago when I spoke about this on the FedDrive program, maybe it was like a month ago. Absolutely, reduce the contributions to your TSP plan. Now, FERS employees, you want to contribute at least 5% to get the full match. But if you're maxing out your contributions to the TSP plan, reduce them and use that extra money to build up an emergency fund. And, you know, there are all types of emergencies in the world. This is just one of them. Everybody should have an emergency fund with 3 to 6 months of living expenses. And, Mike, I don't care if you tell me not to say it.
All right.
I'm
going
to say it. It's just like
you gotta do
really
it.
Good advice. A lot of people don't have it. And, you know, here's this thing that, you know, I never would have expected to happen again, but it may happen again.
And an emergency fund would be different for different people, but it covers things like mortgage or rent.
Yeah.
Electricity, utilities.
Yeah. I would say 3 to 6 months of expenses. And, you know, expenses would include all those things. You might want to include, you know, expenses like entertainment or paying mm-hmm. for soccer for your kids or whatever. And normally I would say, well, you know, federal employee, I mean, you know, 3 months should be fine. You know, now I'm not so sure, not because I think they're going to close the government down for 6 months, but because, you know, maybe they're going to start cutting people's salaries. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do.
Well, I'm one of those people. I paid off my mortgage, you know,
yeah.
Delighted that I did it. A house is less value than when I bought it, but I don't care. It's where I live. But even with that, it seems like the expenses haven't changed. And it's, you know, taxes have replaced this, that, and the other. So even if you think you're in relatively good shape, you have those expenses.
Yeah. You know, your expenses are just going to keep going up. So when you pay off your mortgage, okay, so you've got no longer have a mortgage payment. But remember, all that equity in your home really does not earn a rate of return. It's like an investment with a 0% rate of return. Your home does not appreciate any more quickly because you've paid off the mortgage than if you haven't paid off the mortgage. So then you have to think, well, how am I going to get the money out of my home if I need it? So yes, some people can still get a home equity line of credit, but if you're in a house and the value's gone down, it may be hard to get your equity out.
Okay, if there is a shutdown, you recommend that people and the FERS people, if you're putting in 10 or 6 or something, get it down to 5 so you can get the full government 5% match. That's a tax
deferred
pay raise.
Until you build up an emergency
right.
fund of 3 to 6 months of expenses.
Right, and do that anyway. Would you recommend doing that anyhow?
Absolutely. I recommend it to my clients all the time because there are all types of emergencies, and this is just one of them.
Yeah, okay, the next thing. All right, what goes, this may seem a dumb question, what goes into expenses? What should you consider? I mean, is it any outgo of money,
yeah,
whatever?
Yeah, I would put down you know, again, it's great if you've been keeping track of your expenses. And even if you haven't, I would go through and just take a weekend. It won't be a fun weekend. And just get out all your credit card statements, get out your checkbook, and then try and estimate your cash expenditures. And you can use, you can get an app on an iPhone or something like that to keep track of your budget. You can use something like Quicken and figure out approximately, you're not trying to be exact, how much you spend each month and what you're spending it on just by category. You know, prescription drugs, doctor's appointments, transportation to work, all those things. See where your money's going. This is worthwhile no matter what. You'll be surprised about some things. You'll be very happy about other things. And that will, you know, give you an idea of how much you need to have in an emergency fund. Be sure and include, you know, it's interesting. I asked my clients for this information, been doing it for 20 years, and I realized that I'd never had a client come back to me and say how much that they spent money on pets.
Interesting.
Because I didn't have pets as a category. Uh-huh. I had a miscellaneous category. I never thought to put it in. And, you know, people spend $3,000-$5,000 a year on pets. Some people spend more. It's a lot of money. I would say, you know, one thing, if you're thinking of buying a new pet, maybe you want to wait until this crisis is over.
Get a reptile that eats once a year.
Yeah, know? Something, or eats other people's pets.
Better yet. That's neat. Okay, now, when a government client comes in to you, and I'm sure you, their marital status and their age, health, I guess, are factors. What do you tell them? How do they get their financial house in order or keep it in order?
Well, you know, we go through, and, you know, some people I'm helping them manage their investments. Other people I'm doing like a retirement plan for them or general financial planning. On the general financial planning side, we're looking, do they have the right amount of life, disability, long-term care insurance, homeowners, auto insurance, umbrella? Do they have an emergency fund? What is the allocation of their investments? Is that appropriate to their situation? And all those types of, you know, financial issues. You know, my goal for my clients is they don't ever have to worry about running out of money. I mean, they may have ups and downs, but that they will be financially secure no matter how long they're going to live. And federal employees, you know, CSRS employees tend to have a lot fewer problems, retirees, because they have such a high pension. FERS employees are in a, you know, need a lot more financial planning, because almost every FERS employee at some point is going to have to turn to their investments. When they're retired, they're going to have to turn to their investments to supplement their pension, their annuity. And their annuity is going to be smaller, and the cost of living adjustment is not as great. So there you really have to do a lot of financial planning about how much do you have in investments, how much can you take out, when might you start needing it, those types of issues.
That's a good point, because the difference between the CSRS and the FERS, the old CSRS people get a much larger federal annuity, and it's indexed to inflation, when there is inflation, immediately, no matter what their age, whereas the FERS people get an annuity that's about half that of the old civil service types. It's not indexed to inflation until they hit age 62.
And even when it is indexed to inflation, of course, if it's above 3%, they don't get the full inflation.
They get the diet COLA, diet cost of living adjustment.
And so they're going to get less. So it means the purchasing power, their pension, if we have a normal amount of inflation, which in the U.S. averages around 3.8% to 4%, means in normal times, purchasing power, their annuity is going down.
That's right, yeah. And I've noticed it with people that I know, with the CSRS people are taking money out of their thrift savings plan only because they hit age 70 and a half, and it's mandated, whereas the FERS retirees typically need to tap it earlier.
Yeah, and that's another issue we speak to people, all our clients about is, you know, someone with money in the TSP who's getting close to 70 and a half, or knows that they will, one option you have is, instead of having to take those required minimum distributions, you could convert that to a Roth IRA. You have to pay all the taxes up front, but there are no required minimum distributions after that. And when you take the money out, or when your heirs take the money out, they don't pay any taxes.
Now, if you do that, and we were talking before the show about Roths, but if you do that, convert money from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA, there are still income limitations, aren't there?
Not on the conversion.
Really?
To contribute money to a Roth, there are income limitations. But if you have money in an IRA or in the TSP and you're retired, you can convert any amount to a Roth IRA, no matter what your income is. So it's a strategy that everybody can take advantage of. And, you know, it's one of those things. It's not good for a lot of people. It's very good for a lot of other people.
Yeah.
It just, and that's how we're working with our clients to find out which group they're in.
And it's very nice for your heirs and survivors because they get it. Here's a check for X amount of dollars, no taxes.
No taxes, exactly.
Marvelous. And as everybody predicts, the tax rates now are probably at a historic low. They've got nowhere to go but up. Talking about the Thrift Savings Plan, and I know there's no one-size-fits-all. The Thrift Savings Plan offers these life cycle funds, which are based on your age, or not your age, I'm sorry. They're based on the date when you think you'll begin withdrawing that money. And there's a 20, 30, 20, 40, 20, 50 fund. So if you're going to withdraw it somewhere around 2050, you might go into that fund. It's more aggressive. It's got more stocks in it, less of the Super Safe G Fund or the...
In the early years, more aggressive.
What do you think about those life cycle funds? And do you think the mix in them is appropriate? Because some people we've talked to, some financial planners, think that the government erred on the conservative side and that the mix is a little too conservative.
Well, I think all the life cycle funds out there, people need to understand the purpose of it. It is to gradually reduce the potential volatility of your portfolio over time. And volatility means the fluctuation in value. And so, like with the life cycle funds, when you hit the anniversary date, like 2050, it's 80% in the G and the F fund, and almost all of that is the G fund, just about all of it. It's only 20% in CS and I, which are the stock funds. And that will greatly reduce your volatility. However, the question is, does it increase the amount of money that you can expect to be able to take out of your retirement funds? And there's not only no academic research that would support that, but all the research I've ever seen is that that kind of conservative portfolio is going to reduce the amount of money you can take out and spend. So if you don't need money from the TSP to live on, it's a good strategy. If you do, you have to take into the account that, you know, you're just going to have less money you're able to take out.
Well, there's
now, this is past performance is no guarantee of
exactly.
future performance, all based on historical figures. Last 10 years been horrible for equities. But still, I think that the life cycle funds, you need to understand that the benefit is reduced volatility, not increased amount of money.
I know someone, in fact, he's been on the show, but he said that based on his age and status, he should be in the 2020 fund. But in order to make up for that conservative bent of the closer to retirement, he actually went in the 2030 fund. So he's balancing it, but at a different ratio. Is that a good idea?
I think you're just sort of beating around the bush. I mean, mm-hmm. the question is, what's an appropriate allocation for your investments?
Right.
And, you know, I know people who are going to retire at 55 and don't expect to take money out of their investments for 30, 40 years. Then I know people are going to retire at 65 and expect to immediately need money from their investments. Well, they can't have the same strategy. They should not have the same strategy. You know, if you're going to retire and you're looking at a 20, 30-year retirement, and most people should be, you know, planning for that at least, it means some of the money you're going to spend, you're going to be spending in 20 years. And you want the purchasing power to have increased. And there's no evidence that the life cycle fund will do that.
And, you know, you mentioned that based on the last 10 years, equities have not worked out very well. And that's really because of the crash we took in, what, 07?
Yeah.
I mean, that knocked it down. And I know several people, several federal workers who said, I can't stand it. I know this is the wrong thing to do, but my fund is down, I think, 30, 40% at that point for some people. And they moved everything into the G fund. What about that?
Well, they missed out on one of the biggest rallies in stock market history. I mean, in 2008, the C fund was down 37%, but in 2009 it was up 27%, and in 2010 it was up 15%. That kind of emotional investing means you're constantly buying high and selling low, and you're obviously not going to make money. And you know that's why people use financial planners, so someone can talk them out of that.
Well, I know you've seen me at lunch count out the tip on my fingers, so I'm math challenged. But if it was down 37% in 2008, and then it was up 27 in 2009 and up 15% in 2010, is it back where it was?
It's getting there.
Okay, but it's still not.
Well, you got to understand, over the last 10 years, from 2001 through 2010, C fund barely went up. It averaged over about 1.5